Your mailing list is your absolute number one most important thing. So if people have come into your retail shop, I don't think you should ever let them leave without getting their email. They've made the effort to come in, right? So they've already shown interest. And also because all the other ways that we have to communicate with our client base, so Facebook ads, Meta, Instagram, none of those are yours, but your mailing list is yours. So build a really, really good, solid mailing list.
It's the E-Commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. So before we get into this one, I need to say a big thank you to the person who introduced me to today's guest, who is Lucy Bloomfield from Double Your Orders, who we had on the podcast at the tail end of last year. Lucy, regular listeners will have heard Lucy on the show a few times. She is awesome. And she came on back in December in episode 518 to take us through her Double Your Orders system, which is all about kind of pre-orders and avoiding discounting and building stronger relationships with your customers. Well worth a listen if you haven't heard that one yet. But first, listen to this episode, because in this episode, we're talking to the co-founder and co-designer of a luxury women's footwear brand based in Australia, who have been up and designing shoes for 20 years, but they've made a couple of big pivots in recent years. They've pivoted from predominantly physical store sales to almost entirely online only, and we'll be talking about how they did that. And they've also pivoted from a make the product in advance to more of a pre-order, or more of to a pre-order model. So we'll also be talking about that. She's also sharing lots of interesting, unexpected tips about how she makes her business successful. One apology to the listeners on this is, Joanna, our guest, is in Australia, and it was a very, very hot evening in Melbourne when she was recording it. So I didn't make her shut the window, which means you're going to hear a little bit of noise from the traffic going by outside as you go through this one. So I apologize for that. And then the occasional clinking of bangles as well, which I guess, yes, I could have stopped the interview and got Joanna to take off her bangles, but I was really enjoying chatting to her. So sorry. that's all my fault. But you will ignore the traffic, ignore the jewelry, and you will thoroughly enjoy listening to my chat with Joanna. And make sure you listen to the end, because her top tips are outstanding. Really, really good top tips in this one. And you'll also get my own take on the episode at the end as well. And now to introduce our special guest. Joanna Preston is the co-founder and co-designer at Preston's Lee, creators of beautiful, unique and powerful footwear for women who embody these same qualities. They sell via their Shopify store and physical showroom. Founded over 20 years ago, they now do around $350,000 a year. Hello, Joanna.
Hi, Chloe. Very nice to meet you.
Great to have you on the show. Your business is fascinating, so it's very cool to have you here. But how did you end up in e-commerce? Did e-commerce come first, then shoes, or was it the other way around?
No, it was shoes. Shoes were well and truly first. So I started learning how to make shoes 35 years ago. And I suppose, you know, by the time the very early days of the internet, we did get a website set up, and probably for the last sort of 10 years or more, we had been selling a little bit online, and we'd been really wanting to do more of it, but we just didn't know how. So I think probably the real strength in our online sales has been in the past 5 years.
And was that a pandemic related shift? Kind of gave you the kick up the arse you'd been meaning to give yourself?
Yeah. It wasn't just the time in the pandemic. It was also just that there was a little bit of sort of business support running around. So it gave you a little bit of money to actually sort of go, okay, stop this and start that. So our sales have shifted from being about 75 to 80% retail and 20% online to the opposite. So 80% online, 20% retail.
Wow.
And that shift is becoming more pronounced.
That's mad. That's a big shift in how you run the business.
Yeah. But it's fantastic. Because, I mean, like bricks and mortar are a real millstone. I mean, they're very expensive and you are stuck running it, you know. You don't have much flexibility. You've got to either be in the shop all the time or you've got to employ somebody else to be there all the time. So it's very expensive.
Because you got rid of your physical, you know, your high street store, as it were not that long ago.
Yeah. So we had locked in a 5-year lease in the year before COVID hit, and with the big shift in the finances of our business, I just didn't need it anymore. And I'd set it up to work with two other businesses who didn't manage COVID, so I ended up with the whole of a sort of three business space just for me. So yeah, it's fantastic to have the freedom to be out of there. I operate more by appointment. If people want to see me, it's more either by appointment or just Fridays and Saturdays. So it gives me a lot more freedom to concentrate actually on growing the online and building it more.
So actually, let's tell people a little about the product before we dive into the ins and outs of things. So tell us a bit about the shoes you make and the buying process for the customer.
Okay. So the shoes that we make are very, very unique. We're really not influenced at all by sort of mainstream fashion trends, which end up just sort of in fast fashion. And we design for... Really, I try every collection. We try to design something that is for every sort of mood or occasion that a woman may need them for. So something casual, something really dressy, sort of dressy flats. You know, spread in amongst that, there's a certain number of flats, a certain number of medium heels, and then there'll be one super high heel. When I was younger and our client base were younger, there'd be more high heels. But and especially post COVID, people aren't really wanting to wear heels as much. And it's very, very limited edition. And in the past couple of years, we've really shifted to a pre-order basis in terms of our sales. So we have a classics collection, which is always available. And then we do pre-orders for each new collection. And I carry a little bit of stock of that, but not much. So we've really reduced our the amount of stock that we have to have on hand.
You're kind of making to order, basically, then.
Yeah, making to order, but also, I mean, the thing is that in the past, you're always having to guess like which style is going to be a big seller, and sometimes you think you know, like you really think you know, and it turns out that you're wrong. And so, a couple of seasons ago, I did a shoe that I think I sampled in yellow with a sort of silvery graphite sole. And if I was doing that and I was guessing what people would want, I would have made black and white, white and black, and I would have made three pairs of yellow and that, where actually I got orders for like 40 pairs of the yellow and graphite, and I never would have covered that. So, yeah, so it just means that if something's not a very good seller, I'll only make, or if a colorway is not a good seller, I just won't make it. So it's a lot more control over what you do, but you really have to work at balancing when the promotions go out. The whole process is sort of quite finely tuned, which I'm still working on.
Yes, it's a very different mindset when you can dabble in limited edition and a little bit of pre-order type stuff, but it really is a completely different business process to put it on the shelves, wait for someone to buy it. You know, the workload you do, the marketing you do, the production process, everything changes. So when you're a smaller business, to try and juggle two completely different business models is very hard work.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I think because we're really, really small and there's just the two of us at the moment. I mean, I've got a team of makers and, you know, but in terms of the physical sort of people here doing this work, it's just me and Peter. It means we can be really nimble, which you can't be in a bigger business because you've got to run, you know, you've got to have endless meetings and run things past people. Whereas I can just sort of go, okay, Peter, I think we should do this. And he'll go, yes or no, and we'll do it.
Well, and then I think the pre-order structure for a business actually enables you to be more nimble because you haven't got cash tied up in stock and you haven't got the pressure of selling stuff you've already made, you're going, actually, let's make that and see if anyone wants to buy it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very structured way we do it, you know, so we still design two collections a year. It's not like I'm just sort of going, oh, let's design that and, you know, like, and then sell it. Like, it's very, very, very structured. And it's taken a fair bit of time to sort of build that structure into the business. And in the end, to do that properly, I ended up having to ditch all the sort of computer diaries and all that sort of stuff. And I had to go and buy myself a big desk month by month calendar and where I could turn pages and put things in and out because I needed to visualize it and I just couldn't do that using the computer programs, you know, to diarize things. I needed it really big. I needed to be able to write down everything. So I know, okay, when we're designing this, when we're going to get it back from the man, when we're going to get the sample back, when we're going to photograph it, when we're going to sell it, how we're going to sell it, all of that is, you know, got a very particular structure that's all laid out in this big sort of desktop.
Yeah, I think sometimes you do need that physical, you know, the tech is great for a lot of things, but sometimes, especially when it's kind of visualizing time, you need that physical element and the ability to move post-it notes around. When you were describing it, it made me think of that scene in Devil Wears Prada.
You know, I've never seen that film. Can you believe it?
So they've got a wall. I think it's a word product. It might have been one of the documentaries about.
Yeah.
But they literally have a wall where the pages of the magazine are out on the wall and that's how they work out what the magazine looks like. And I think it's a very similar process. Parts that are moving in a lot of different ways and you need to just quickly be able to move something and see what it impacts, not go, if I change that date on the Asana board, what happened, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, everything's in pencil so it can be rubbed out and I probably should try post-it notes, but I just, pencil, handwriting, like old school.
Yeah, whatever works for you is that, I mean, I do a lot less paper than I used to, but I am still surrounded by paper.
And me too. But I had to go back to buying a proper diary as well with a date or page. There was just sort of too many things everywhere and I needed it all in one place where I can just look at it and turn pages and, you know, count. And the other thing about time, it's a very hard thing. It's a sort of very spatial thing.
Yeah.
I'm rambling on here. So probably should go on. Ask me another question.
I love a bit of chat about productivity, but okay, let's ask you another question. So you're based in Melbourne, Australia.
Yes.
Creating these beautiful, luxury, almost one-of-a-kind shoe designs. Are you selling those globally or do you keep it within Australia?
No, we sell globally. I think probably that most of our export sales go into the United States. So we'll see what happens in the next few weeks once, you know.
Who knows?
Once more of the proverbial hits the fan over there. UK is hard because there's a very, very high duty that people have to pay when it goes into the UK. And I haven't really tried, so a bit of Scandinavia, but I haven't really tried to sort of tackle Europe. I'm a one step at a time sort of a person and changing the way we've operated the business is enough. So I just think that if we just keep plugging away, eventually we'll be selling more overseas, just organically.
Well, presumably returns become a bit of a challenge when you're selling in the way you're selling and then if you've got the overseas element as well. Because I'm guessing yours aren't the shoes. I mean, price point's what, $200 to $400, if I'm remembering correctly?
No, our price point is about $650 to $900.
There we go.
So freight is an issue. Basically, we've sort of got a perfect fit guarantee. So if something doesn't fit, people can send it back and I will cover the postage. So we do that. And occasionally it works out to be really expensive. But most people are happy to send it back and have another pair sent in the right size. And the more they buy, of course, the more you know about their feet. So the more I can advise and recommend on what size they should get. So it's about really building trust so that people feel as if they could, you know, it's almost like buying from the shop.
So that was something I wanted to ask you about, actually, was you've made this big shift from almost entirely via your physical store to almost entirely online, selling this luxury price point almost bespoke item. How do you manage the personal touch, that customer service element that people, obviously you've got the perfect fit guarantee to get people beyond that fear of it not fitting. But do you find, you know, there's an awful lot of chat that goes on, or have you got it to a point where a lot of people will just come and get their credit card out and buy during your sale periods?
There's a little bit of to-ing and fro-ing, but not too much. It mostly it'll be questions about fit. But the other thing is, we were talking about Lucy Bloomfield before. So we started working with her when we really made this big shift over. And she, you know, her whole thing was about how you communicate to your audience. So we are very, very approachable and personable. And I think most people, you know, if you look at the reviews we've got, most people are sort of saying Joanna is a pleasure to deal with. So I think we've managed to really maintain the sort of personal relationship that you would have with somebody if they're a retail client with our online clients, even though I don't know what they look like, you know, some of them. I've never met them, but I think that we've managed to sort of develop that rapport over time just with via email and Instagram Messenger and all those sort of other messenger apps that are there.
So it's a text-based comms, whether it's email or Messenger or Insta or whatever.
Yeah. And I much prefer text-based because otherwise it gets lost, you know. It's just, you know, phone calls, it's like, you know, if you've got a lot of things going on, it's just something you've got to remember. And if it's not written down exactly, it's just lost. So, yeah, I'm a very big fan of text-based communication.
You and me both. So what's the thing that's got you excited in the business at the moment? If you can nail it to one.
I'm really excited to be able to, just having changed to having a showroom that's open a couple of days a week, to be able to step back and be able to sort of be a bit more flexible in my life. And the freedom that that gives me and Peter to do other things, but also it gives you freedom to grow your business because you're not stuck in it all the time, so you can actually think about it. And I'm really excited just about sort of refining the structure that we're working on so that it's running, so that it runs really smoothly.
So the joy of not being tied to the till.
Yes, yeah.
For five, 6 days a week.
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool. And I'm sure we've got some people listening who are considering getting rid of their physical store and going kind of fully online with that showroom element. Any advice you'd give them about making the right decision or making the most even of life without the store?
Well, I mean, okay, so your mailing list is your absolute number one most important thing. So if you have, and if people have come into your retail shop, right, you should never, I don't think you should ever let them leave without getting their email because they've made the effort to come in, right? So they've already shown interest. So that's a really important thing. And also because all the other ways that we have to communicate with our client base, so Facebook ads, Meta, Instagram, all those sort of things, none of those are yours, but your mailing list is yours. So build a really, really good, solid mailing list. And you want to, of course, carry over all your existing customers to be, you know, and that does take time. When you shift from one retail space to another, it does take time for your client base to follow you. No matter how much you communicate with them, like not everybody is going to open every email, you know, that sort of thing. So it takes time to get them to follow you where you go.
So it's a decision to make a year or more before that lease runs out.
Yeah, absolutely. And also because you've got to make sure, you know, like if you are going to have a space that people are going to come, I mean, it's up to you how you want it to be. It can be a really sort of traditional, like say if you're in the fashion industry or whatever, it could be like a really traditional tailoring space with a big cutting table or whatever. But we wanted ours to be still sort of like a gallery type showroom. So that's clean and neat and, you know, dust free and dirt free and chaos free, or as much as that is possible.
I guess chaos Sunday to Thursday. And then,
yeah, exactly. And then the vacuum Friday, cleaner Saturday. Comes out and, you know, but we've got a little ginger cat that likes to sleep on my black couch in there. So I've just had to get a sheet and put that over. I've got to remember at the end of every day, put the sheet over the couch because I can never get that fur off.
Real world problems.
Yeah.
Sleeping on the black sofa.
Yeah.
But a lot of businesses kind of make that mistake of going, oh, the lease ends next month. What are we going to do? I mean, I know legally you usually tie it up before then. But actually, if you're planning on getting out of the physical store, you want to spend a good year making sure you're having the conversations with the customers and you're gathering the data and you've got your systems in place. So the second you're closed, you're communicating and letting them know of the new scenario, whether it's online only, whether it's pop-ups, whether it's that showroom element, and that the showroom's ready to go. So it's clearly not a just guess it.
Yeah, certainly not. And the thing is, I mean, if you are going to, obviously, if you are going to change a model to similar to what we are, you've got to really get on top of how you're going to actually reach people. So it's not just because, I mean, obviously having a good mailing list is a great start, but you've got to actually constantly be growing that mailing list. So you've got to really know what you're doing. You've got to know how you're actually emailing them, how to use those email systems because each one's different. You know, how to get it to look good, how to all that email scheduling and all that sort of stuff, which, you know, I was sort of doing a little bit before, but, you know, it's a much bigger job once, especially once you're launching the way we are.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, it's time for the top tips. And I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our business to the next level. So, Joanna, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. The book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agrees to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
I would recommend, and I'm sure lots of people have recommended this, Profit First by Mike Michalowicz. I'm not sure if this is a big worldwide seller, but there's a person in Australia called the Barefoot Investor, and he is all about sort of really, really simple ways of controlling your finances, but it's more for sort of everyday people that have got wages. And Profit First is like the sort of small business version of that. And the one thing that had really transformed things for me, he was like, if you can afford to pay $100 or something, I can't even remember because it's a long time since I read it, but you can afford 1% of that, right, to go into your own savings, like 1%, like you can afford it. It's not, you know, always, and that's changed. So always a percentage of my, and I'd probably need to go back to that book and reread it and sort of up the percentages and delve deeper. But that's been really transformational for me.
You know, on my list, my to-do list for this week is update our Profit First percentages, which anyone who knows Profit First will know what I'm on about. If you don't know what we're on about, go and read it. It's like the anti-accountancy book. It's kind of like business finance for Muppets. But, you know, you don't need an accounting degree and all of a sudden your business accounts will make so much more sense to you.
Yeah. Yes. I probably need to reread it too, actually.
Yeah. It's definitely, I probably ought to reread it before I do my percentages, actually. But then I won't get them done this week. Oh, no. Yeah.
Oh, well.
Right. enough of my accounting issues or cash flow issues. Traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
Well, I tried something about 3 weeks ago that was on a recommendation of another sort of small business podcaster, Jodi Minto. And she and I had from the whole time I've been doing anything with social media, so for the past 10 or so years on Facebook and all the rest of it, was always never boost posts, only ever do proper ads, never boost posts. Well, she said, I would normally tell people not to do this, but if you want to grow your Instagram, this is boost a post and do this. And it's been amazing because that, you know, like organic growth on Instagram just does not happen. And boosting a post, I've just had regular every day, you know, like 10 new followers a day. It's just been fantastic. So that's been my most exciting sort of revelation.
Crikey, everyone, you heard it here first. The boost post button might now be something you're allowed to use.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, you know, I will continue to do it because it's just, it's really great to see those numbers because I mean, obviously like Instagram really is where you're going to be able to get people to then get onto your mailing list to turn into customers. So that's the sort of first top of funnel type of thing you have. It's great. I never would have done it without that. And it's like, I think I've put a $5 a day budget on it.
Wow, everybody, there we go. Test it. And as Joanna just said, make sure you've actually got the funnel in place, because otherwise you're just paying for ego building activity. And whilst that's lovely, it's not going to build your business. So make sure you've got the funnel ready and you know how you're converting them to emails, email signups, and then into inquiries. Love that tip. Thank you, Joanna. The top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Well, this is going to be another one that's going to be probably a sort of a no-brainer, but I started towards the end of the last year using ChatGPT almost like my PA, and it has just transformed everything for me.
Have you got a couple of clever prompts you're willing to share for or problems you've used it to solve for anyone who's holding back as well?
Okay, well, I'll tell you how I started. I paid for a very, very small course in how to set up lead generation ads on Facebook because I sort of was a bit lost. And that was all like setting it all up and everything was really good. But this person's course is all about offering a giveaway over a period of time and getting people to sign up. And it's like, that's not going to work because I'm not going to be giving away and I don't have a small sort of throwaway product that I can give away, and it devalues our brand. And I don't want people signing up to be given, you know, and then unsigning. So, and already in that setup, I'd had to go backwards and forwards through YouTube tutorials, just a little sort of, you know, because Meta ads is hard. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so close, but what am I going to do? What's my offer? And I thought, oh, I could spend another 2 days, you know, like sort of going backwards and forwards with more YouTube tutorials. And I'd been using ChatGPT a little bit, but not much, just for some sort of a little bit of help with copy, right? And I was like, oh, wow, that's, I better not swear. My natural thing is to throw in an F word or so. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to ask ChatGPT. And so I just threw in the question, you know, what should I do? I don't want to do such and such, like just like a conversation, a text-based conversation. And ChatGPT said, sure, Joanna, we'll do this and that and the other, and I'll help you all the way through. And it was just amazing. And I've been using it every day since.
Love that.
For everything. It helps me schedule things. It helps me come up with the calendar for a launch calendar. It just you know, or occasionally it'll be like I had to send a really sort of serious letter to a commercial real estate agent over another property that we manage, and they'd done something really dodgy. So I was in Queensland for my uncle's funeral, which is like, you know, like another continent away if you're in Europe, and I got this, you know, scenario happening. It's like, oh God. And so I just went ChatGPT and I threw in, you know, like very, very inarticulately, this is what's happened, this is what I need, bang, bang, you know, can you write me a letter? And I said, oh, I'm scared to send it. It's a bit too hard, you know. And so I said that, and he said, he said, oh, how about this? This makes it just a little bit friendlier, but it's still just as firm, blah, blah. Sent it, bang, 24 hours later, got an apologetic response. So it's like a PA for me, or a second brain, like, you know, the spare brain that I can offload things onto.
Love those two examples. Thank you, Joanna. And the last top tip is the carbon top tip. What's your favourite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
Well, for me, it has been changing to the pre-orders. Absolutely. Changing our business from carrying a lot of stock to selling on a pre-order basis means we're not making, we still have to make a bit of extra stock, but we're not second guessing. So that's a massive, massive. But apart from that, like tonight, I'm sitting here with you and I've got 2 lights on when I could have like 8 lights on. I'm conscious of that sort of eco issues all the time, because if you're in a small business, you can't not be, really, I think.
Yeah. And I think it is one of those big, big shifts. You know, you can talk from the pre-order model, you can talk about the cash flow impact, you can talk about the way it changes how the business operates. But one of the biggest shifts is you're not creating a load of waste at the beginning of the process. And that's such a good thing for the eco side of everything. So love that you've given us that one, Joanna. Now, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media, please?
Okay, so you better get a pencil out and write this down because I'll spell it for you. So it is www.prestonzly.com. So that's our website, and Instagram is Prestonzly. That's how you say it. So same spelling as the website, and obviously Prestonzly is on Facebook as well, but that's they're the two best places to find us. And hope to see you all signing on into our Instagram page and checking out what we've got to show.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Joanna. It's been a real treat chatting to you, and I wish you all the best with your next release.
Thank you, Chloe. It was fun.
Lots of juicy practical tips there from Joanna. Obviously, Boost Post. Who'd have thought it? This isn't the first time I've heard that Boost Post is now worth testing at the very least. So go and have a go at that one. And as she said, she's only spending $5 a day and it's making a difference. How to get out of a physical store successfully. Loved her tips on that. And the impact that shifting to the pre-order model and changing their physical store has had. Lots of cool stuff. And it, obviously, you know, if you're a regular listener, you will know I love a bit of paper and calendars on the wall, calendars on the desk. I'm here for that all day long. You can get your hands on the notes from this episode, including the top tips and links to what we've mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. There you'll also find a link to the episode we did with Lucy Bloomfield, which was all about... So Lucy's who introduced me to Joanna. And Lucy did episode 518, not that long ago, where she talked us through the pre-order model that Joanna was just talking about. So we put a link to that in the show notes as well, or you can just scroll up your podcast feed to 518 to get that, where you can find her talking through the ins and outs of that process. Very, very clever process. That's an episode well worth having a listen to. So yeah, you can find all that at the website. You can use our direct to episode short link. Just put ecmp.info/ the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll go straight to the right page on the site. When you get to the website, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of those things we share to help you improve your e-commerce store. And if you liked this episode and you want to do more, have another listen to something else in the cool luxury footwear zone, then check out episode 44. Yes, 44, way, way back in time, where I chat to Tanya Heath from Tanya Heath Paris about their women's shoe brand and business. And I'm mentioning that one because I kept thinking about it whilst I was researching and prepping for this one. So it's clearly a fit if it was coming out of my brain from 9, 10 years ago when we recorded it, but still hugely relevant what we're talking about. And you can get all our fashion episodes on the website at ecmp.info/fashion. Right, that's more than enough stuff for you guys to go off and listen to next. Thank you for tuning into this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help you to succeed and thrive with your business, including progressing along the path to sustainability. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I'm off to update my profit first percentages. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.